speaker for this evening. And also Ben Herbins from Hyperion.
Hey, Ben.
All right, there he is. And there's there are. I hesitate to go into names because I know I'm going to forget somebody. Thank you all for coming from such wide areas in the world. New York State, Belgium, Germany, all over the place. And I, like I said, I just forgot somebody, I know. So without further ado, head table, if you will proceed down to the start of the line, which is right here, I guess. No, it can't be. It has to be the other end because the plates are there. Then all of you can hopefully in some sort of orderly fashion follow us.
So as I was waxing before, missing Joe and walking into that first St. Louis, the Ohio show in 96, 97, 98, it all kind of runs together. And seeing the Boing Ball Levitator for the first time, that was so freaking cool. Yeah, but for the first time, like, okay, so we all pile in this minivan. We drive 6 hours to our first Amiga show, and on the way down, a truck in front of us, the axle broke, and the tire went bouncing past the car. And Hans Wolf, who was in the back seat, said, "Damn, I wish I was in the front seat, because if that thing was going to hit it, you know, he wants to see it come full force. He doesn't want anything in front of him to block his view." That was crazy. So we get to the hotel, and it was nuts. But and then that spawned the Boing shoes, and of course I'm wearing my Boing shoes that we made for Joe in tribute to the Boing Ball Levitator. And then he made the mini levitator, and that was just kind of weird. That we had, that was 98. So the Boing Ball Levitator must have been 97. And the shoes, the Boing Ball Levitator must have been 97. And the shoes were a follow-on in St. Louis. And I'm hungry, so I'm going to get some food. Bye.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed their meal today. I thought it was quite delicious. I just had something really quick to say for you guys. About 15 years ago, I came into some money from an inheritance and saw the glitz and glamour of the Amiga and ran down to Louis' Amiga store and bought my first Amiga. And I loved the computer. But even more than the computer, I learned that there's a community that came with the Amiga. And it's a community of acceptance and friendliness and helpfulness. If I ever went down and asked somebody for help, there was never anybody who said, "Oh, I'm too busy, go away or leave me alone." Everybody was always helpful, and I never had any problems using my computer. God forbid I ever have that for my Windows computer. And so every year, SAC recognizes people who are helpful to the community and who put in energies and efforts. And that particular award's called the Ken Barton Memorial Award. And this year, we're going to be giving the award to somebody who's been with the group since the beginning and has been the group president for roughly 5 years. I think we can all guess who that is. Brian, I'd like to welcome Brian Dineen up here to the stage. Brian, the board presents this to you in recognition for all of your service to SAC and the community. Thank you very much. I hope that you'll help me.
Thank you very much, Charles. Wow.
Well, just one small correction. I haven't been with the group since the beginning, but I have been with the community since the beginning. It's been an interesting community ride. I've been in several different cities and been in several different clubs. And I think the largest one I was ever in was in Kansas City, where there was about 500 members in that one that attended every meeting. And you can imagine what it took to find a meeting place for that kind of group. But I had decided when I came here that I would like to be more involved and would like to learn a lot more. And during the last... since 1998, I attended AMU West 98 here in this hotel. And I guess it was a little over a year later that they said, "Well, why don't you run for president?" I said, "What's that mean?" And at the time they said, "Oh, well, it's just kind of like running the meetings and the board meetings and that kind of stuff." And I said, "That's great." At the time, John Zacharias and Michael Salcedo were running AMU West. It was their brainchild, and they had established it the same year, I think it was the same year, correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck, that our last Amiga store here in Sacramento closed. So the idea was to have at least a once-a-year big old store where everybody could come and see what was the latest thing and buy it. And so that was the original idea behind AMU West. And so I've decided not to follow in Ken Barton's steps. Unfortunately, the reason this is a memorial award is because Mr. Barton's no longer with us. And he as I understand it, died at a kind of an early age. So I don't want to follow in his steps immediately. And I also, sadly, and some of you know John Zacharias, who is still quite disabled from a very debilitating stroke that he suffered while he was at an Amiga show in St. Louis several years ago. So I've tried to quit while I'm ahead, and the board wouldn't accept my resignation, and they said, "Well, why don't you just take a leave of absence," which I am doing, and this is kind of a big surprise to me. I really do appreciate it, guys. It really is something I never did expect, and I think it's kind of the fun part is when you don't expect it. But I know another thing has happened. We're going to kind of segue in here to the introduction of our guest speaker this evening. Another thing that a lot of us did not expect was for Amiga Incorporated to sell the Amiga OS to somebody else. And I know when I saw that announcement, I thought, here we go again. I know that been there, done that several times in the past 10 years. And so what do we do now? We, meaning those of us who still believe in this and still have a lot invested in it, both financially and personally. And I thought, well, maybe the price, the market price of my 13 Amigas in my personal collection will go up. That hasn't happened, unfortunately. And I'm kind of seeing why with some dinner conversation here, because I think that we have some people who are our allies now who own the Amiga operating system. In your show packets, you got a copy of the Amigazette for the show, and it has the profile for Dr. Gary Hare, who is now CEO of, I guess you call it KMOS? KMOS, okay. Whatever you want. Huh? And we've been having some interesting discussion up here, and I know he's got some what he thinks will be interesting announcements for us tonight. I think they will be, too. So without further delay on my part, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gary Hare, our guest speaker for this evening.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I had no idea we weren't going to have a restroom break before the speaking part, so I'll go really fast. I'd like to clear up this doctor thing right away. Last Tuesday morning, my 9-year-old daughter said that she didn't want to go to summer camp because she didn't feel well. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said that she had a sore throat. And I said, well, open your mouth, let me take a look at it. And she said, well, what would you know? And I used my normal, trust me, I'm a doctor. She said, you're not a real doctor. So if I can't convince my 9-year-old, there's no reason I should convince you. I used the title to make hotel reservations in hopes of a room upgrade. Other than that, everybody calls me Gary. I'd like to thank Brian very much and everyone else associated with Emmy West for giving me the opportunity to make a few comments this evening. And I'd like to thank all of you too, for taking your time to attend, not to mention the $28 for dinner, of course. And maybe the best way to spend the time together is if I make a few remarks. I'll make a couple of announcements that perhaps you'll find interesting. I noticed on the website that they were characterized as special announcements, and I don't know if they're so terribly special. Let's just call them sort of announcements for now. And then toward the end, if any of you have any questions, I'll try to respond or at least waffle my way through them. For about a year, we've been looking at the objectives of both the wired and wireless operators and trying to take a look at what's going to drive the business models behind them. And I think it's safe to say that the near future seems to revolve around internet-connected devices, many, perhaps most of them, mobile. And the next wave of this internet revolution is dramatically changing what we call the internet today. Mobile and wireless communications, traditional telephony, TV broadcasting, cable and satellite transmissions. They're rapidly all converging over the traditional internet. And increasingly, consumers expect instant access to any content, played on any device, transmitted over any network, and stored anywhere in the world. This expectation requires easy access to digital data, to voice, and to video, and to and from the home, the office, or any mobile location. I was telling Brian up here that Cisco's got a new little product that they're just playing with. It'll be ready for market, I guess, within a year. And it's basically a little wireless server for the home, about the size of a cigar box, got a little ear on the top of it. And connected to a cable system, it will simply deliver data to whatever device needs it, TV, PC, handheld device, doesn't make any difference at all. Simply a wireless data server for the home. We think that kind of device is going to drive a bunch of very interesting markets. We see this as the next wave of revolution in data access and connectivity. And we think, and we have thought for some time, that it clearly requires a parallel revolution in software and the operating system that enables it. As you all know, almost all current operating systems are designed to compute and manipulate data through a standalone desktop computer and or server. As internet connectivity is added, most of these operating systems become increasingly large, slow, and worse, susceptible to virus attacks, and in the case of mine, spontaneous crashes. These bloated operating systems have proven difficult or even impossible to adapt to new and smaller devices, such as smartphones or gaming consoles, PDAs, set-top boxes, to say nothing of the embedded device market. And this results in technical and market fragmentation, as vertical operating systems designed for specific devices are incompatible and mutually inoperable. It's an interesting situation that we have right now. As an aside, I was in Asia not too terribly long ago, and one of the major manufacturers, device manufacturers over there, said, our entire business model hinges on having mobile devices be driven by set-top boxes. And I said, where did you get this idea? You know? And they had hired some consultant from the United States who came over and said, you know, your business model ought to really hinge on mobile devices being connected to set-top boxes. And they went, wow, that's pretty cool. Can anybody do that? Well, sure, I guess. And the only problem that you have is hinged on incompatible operating systems that are so large that they don't work at all on the mobile devices, at least the ones that they're using right now in parts of China, let alone the set-top market. So against this backdrop, Camos was formed to provide, I guess, what many would consider a radical solution, a simple device and network-independent multimedia operating system, adapting itself to any device and to any network. This OS not only would control a given device, but enable it to be connected to all other devices or networks, bringing what we see as the full power of the internet to any device, anywhere, and anytime. When I saw this business objective is when I decided that I'd taken the wrong job. And the board was saying, this is what we want you to do. And I was saying, I don't have a clue how to do that. The required operating system, though, has got to be small. It's got to be fast. It's got to be robust. And it must be secure from virus attacks, security breaches, and crashes, of course. It must offer an intuitive user interface and support instant on-off connectivity to the internet. It must support two-way connectivity. It must enable peer-to-peer communication. And it must be easy to use such multi-user applications as the popular gaming. We think that the Amiga operating system for this purpose is the best operating system ever developed. We think it meets many of these requirements, and we think that with continuing development, it can meet most, if not all of them. Perhaps the near-term future from the wireless operator point of view is best represented by Japan's NTT Docomo. Next month, Docomo will introduce a phone that makes calls. As an aside, I always thought that was an important aspect of phones. Enables email, plays games, accesses over 80,000 enabled websites, takes photographs. That, by the way, as an aside, I thought would fail, and I've never understood. I know why the phone companies like it. You can take a really bad photograph and send it to somebody, and they charge you about $1. Now, you can do the same thing with a good camera and send it over the internet darn near for free. But the phone companies thought, gee, if everybody just takes one of these every once in a while, you add up all those bucks, and it looks like a pretty cool business. I, at a meeting, told one of the major phone companies about 3 years ago that this was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen. It would never catch on. And I don't know why they were wasting their time with this market. I noticed the last time they did the strategic meeting, they didn't invite me back. So I've decided not to come out with these strong marketing opinions anymore. It also reads barcodes, and of course it downloads and plays music. Now, all those things taken together are available from two different providers right now. But this contains a chip from Sony that enables users to pay for groceries. It serves as personal identification. It operates appliances. It buys movie and transit tickets. It can even open your car door and unlock your home. Basically, what Docomo did, and I think this is illegal, by the way, in the United States, but in Japan, they called together their marketing team, men and women, and they asked all of them around a conference table, probably much bigger than the ones you're sitting at, to dump the contents of their purses and pockets and wallets on the table. And then they said, what do people carry around and what does it do? And how much of that stuff could we put on a phone? And the answer was almost all of it. When they came over and visited me, they thought it was pretty weird that we buy these little devices to put on our car dashboard so you can drive across the Golden Gate Bridge and they charge you your $5 rather than just taking it from you. And they said, why isn't that in your phone? I said, I don't know. And they said, well, that's a very easy application. They also have situations now in the transit situations in Tokyo and soon in Korea with a little touchpad where you just walk through the turnstile, touch your phone to the pad, and whatever train you're taking is automatically billed to your phone bill. I think the phone companies in the U.S. would love it if everything we did was automatically billed to them. I'm not sure it would be a great idea from my point of view. But you can see where they're thinking about going with some of these devices. There are some security problems because hackers, being what hackers are, have already figured out a way to walk by people and steal their financial data from the phone while it's in their pocket. So they're working on this. They've decided if you have to touch something, then it's probably okay. But if it's remote, then you can't do it. Whenever you go to any of the technical sites with Docomo, it's sort of like going to Finland a couple of years ago, where people keep asking you if you want a Coke. And you go, I don't drink Coke. You want one of those orange things? No, I don't drink those orange things. And they go, well, come on, have like a lemon lime. Because then you go, okay, I'll have a lemon lime. Because they thought it was so cool that you could buy a soft drink with your cell phone. Well, imagine that caught on in China with about 100 billion people buying a Coke every once in a while with their phone, being billed through the phone company once again. That's an interesting aspect of where they see these mobile devices going and what enables them. But Sony's particularly interested in using this type of phone for digital rights management. Your TV, through your phone, would know which programs you'd paid for. So if, for example, you wanted to watch a channel, let's say that you subscribed to HBO but not to Showtime and something was on Showtime you wanted to see. If you wanted to watch a program on Showtime, you simply program the code into your phone, it would be approved, and whatever the price was, a couple bucks, would be billed through the phone. Sony sees this as the future of all content digital rights management. I don't know that they're correct with that, but it's an interesting aspect of how to be able to let people control their lives remotely. All of your credit cards, your loyalty cards, your money, your keys, all the stuff people carry around would be built into the phone. And by mid-2005, the phone can be wrapped in solar film from a company called Konarka, recharging itself from any light source. This Konarka film is pretty cool. You can just take your phone and stick it on your seat of your car or dashboard or in the window of your house or wherever, and sunlight recharges it. It's sensitive enough, by the way, that they're wrapping now within a year PCs, so the laptop computers and mobiles, you can just run around and lay them somewhere and they recharge themselves. Which in my case, I don't seem to be able to remember the power supply when I travel, so it would be really, really a cool thing to have. So to better participate in this connected and wireless future, Kamos has taken a couple steps. Bill, I may need your help cranking up this little projector. I'm embarrassed that we have a projector and I have like two sentences to show on the screen. I thought I'd just say it, but maybe I should show it. Is this being webcast? Okay, so this is in advance of any the press releases that will sort of describe in more detail the announcements that I'm about to make. So I thought I'd just get all of you to agree, as if we have an NDA, not to mention this anymore.
No,
I'm just kidding. So if anybody on the other side of the webcast will have an NDA from you guys, too. It's one thing I have learned since getting involved with Amiga is this is a community that really knows how to keep secrets.
We are writing
and keep
down your IP
shut.
Addresses.
Let me make the first announcement. You're going to go, why did he do this in a word? This should be up higher on the screen. And he told me he was going to say that. Camus recently acquired Capacity Networks Incorporated. This Helsinki-based company has a couple of interesting product families. The first deals with data storage. Software from Capacity automatically and securely stores and retrieves files from any device on any given network. For example, in my house, and this is not a complete inventory, I don't think, I have a digital video recorder. I think it's got 160 hard drive in it. A desktop PC, three laptops that work, a couple PDAs, I'm not entirely sure how many mobile phones, and some other stuff. If I networked all this stuff together, some of which is already networked, I could, for example, download a feature film from my cell phone. I don't encourage that, by the way. And it would automatically be stored wherever space was available. The same thing would be true on any network. So if you have a small business and all your stuff's networked and your server reads full, your content server, just whatever space was available would be securely stored. Now if, for example, your data was stored on my PC, I would not have access to it unless you gave it to me. It automatically takes all the data on the network and uses it as it needs to be used. We think that data storage, as the world moves toward large file-rich media, is critically important. We think it's not only important in the home. We think it's important in almost all business environments, particularly smaller business environments. And for that reason, to enable some of the things that we see in this mobile future, we thought that was an interesting feature, a very interesting feature of this company. The second product family from Capacity deals with efficient transmission of data itself. For proprietary reasons, I can't go into exactly how this works. But in essence, what it does is it reads your historical use of data, it projects your transmission, and automatically and instantly figures the most efficient route for the transmission of the file by size across the internet, or for that matter, across any network. In some tests, the efficiencies run as high as 15%. So when you look at a situation where you can get 15% greater transmission because of a simple piece of software being loaded into the PC or the server, it becomes important as you start to look at trying to enable, once again, large file, rich media stuff. The only other group I've mentioned this to, by the way, today is a company down in Los Angeles that sees their future in being able to take all of their feature films and put them on content servers and deliver them to consumers on demand. So they found this extraordinary, that they would be able to save this kind of transmission time to move these large files from point A to point B. So we're interested, you can see, not just on the OS side of the world. We're interested in enabling a certain other parts of the world as well. And our second announcement tonight. I think you'll find this one more interesting. We've acquired Amiga Incorporated. We finished this acquisition in the last few days, and some people would ask, why would you do something like that? You already bought the OS. And we've got actually several reasons for it. The first reason is that as somebody that's supposed to be running a company, I think that a big part of my responsibility is in building a brand. In fact, one of the few papers I've ever written in the last 5 years was why the CEO was supposed to be responsible for brand building. And I take that quite seriously. And you can't very well build a brand if you don't have any control over it. The second is that I have said, and I don't say much, as most of you know, and I don't intend to start saying much from now on either, unless there's free dinners involved, and then I guess I have to. I have said on numerous occasions that I think one of the most attractive things about Amiga is, while it's semi-dormant, an extraordinarily talented and creative and capable developer community which needs to be rekindled, and we will spend our time and our money doing so. And perhaps the best way to do that in the short run is to focus on Amiga's DE technology and line of products. We will be announcing extensions to DE soon, some of which I think you will find surprising. And we would like to move DE into the mobile market immediately, and are doing so with existing content, and we have already started to support the developer community by doing something that hasn't been done to them in a long time, paying them to make applications. It goes without saying that our intention is to build the Amiga brand and enter into relationships with as many strategic partners as possible. Someone called me before coming here. You can get my home number, but don't. And they got my home number, and they called me, and they told me what their expectations were about my talk. And I explained to them that one of the things I do not do is I do not talk about product roadmaps. I do not talk about pending relationships with potential partners. I do not talk about things that haven't happened yet. So in the case of the acquisition of Capacity, the acquisition of Amiga, both these things have happened. You're the first to know. We will send press releases detailing what that means to some degree. But I just hope that you understand that you can talk to 10 large companies and never come to a deal with any of them. You can talk to one briefly and have a major strategic relationship. In every case, with every company that I've ever talked with about anything over the last decade or decade and a half, I have confidentiality agreements. I won't violate them. I don't anticipate anyone that has a confidentiality agreement with me to violate it as well. But we will, as things happen, talk about their implications, share as much as we possibly can with all of you, because I know that you're more than curious. You're active, supportive users and developers, and that's extraordinarily important. I have said that we will now, I get this question, why don't you have a website, you know? And it's like a mantra. Well, we don't have a KMOS website for a very simple reason. We didn't need one, and we certainly didn't want one, and we wanted to make acquisitions as quietly as we possibly could, and we're not through yet. However, we now own all the Amiga websites, and those will be rekindled with some people from Amiga, some people from other companies, and me. And the developer support website will look and behave differently than it ever has in the past. I am associated with a firm. I'm on their board. I think the best developer support market intelligence company in the United States, and we have contracted with them to build a website that's useful to the world's developers that want to associate either on the DE side or in the longer term on the operating system and mobile side as well. I'm happy now to answer any questions. You know everything I know, so anybody have any? You bet.
What about NASA? Have you ever gotten to them to where you can give them first choice at it?
I'm sorry?
NASA.
I haven't talked to them, no.
To give one of their systems up and running.
Well,
or upstairs.
I'll pass that along to one of our market development guys. But I'm talking to mobile guys right now.
Well, that's what they want.
Mobile. talk to me after this thing's over. As long as they promise, I mean, you talk about companies having problems with crashes. That's always concerned me about NASA. But just kidding.
Yeah. One of the things that's plagued Amiga ever since the very beginning is advertising. You know, Commodore, everybody who has never really advertised to the general public and let the general public know that it exists and what it can do. So I think that's one of the things that we'll be all looking for.
Well, I think there's a difference between advertising and product marketing. I mean, advertising is a piece of that. But when you talk about product marketing and brand building, I think that's certainly the case. And so we'll be doing some things, obviously, as products start to come out, that try and support that from a branding point of view and from a product marketing point of view. Most of the stuff, I mean, we don't have any intention of being in the hardware business. So everything that's hardware will be done with strategic partners. So in most cases, you can do collaborative kinds of marketing with a strategic partner and get bigger companies to devote far more resources to consumer marketing and business-to-business marketing. But you have to know how you want to manage your brand, or they don't know what to say about you. So that's one of the things we'll turn our attention to quite quickly. Actually, to some degree, we already have. And we'll see a little bit different positioning, I think, of the brand in the future than you have in the past. What you don't want to do is do what they did with the Thunderbird. You know, is you take this really cool brand and then really goof it up, you know, and so bring out a product that's so lame that everyone that liked Thunderbirds hates it, and everybody that didn't ever know anything about Thunderbirds go, what in the world's that thing supposed to be? We'd like to do something so that everyone that has loved Amiga over the years has a reason to continue to do so. And in terms of, I'll repeat the question for the webcast. What can I say about personnel and staffing of the existing Amiga people, or just generally speaking? We have made offers. We have hired some people, some of whom have been with Amiga, some of whom have not. We will make additional offers in the very near future to some people that have been with Amiga, some people that have not. And so our current staffing level is Spartan. We have about a dozen full-time employees, an equal number of contractors. I would expect to grow that in the next couple of quarters by maybe 50%, but not too much bigger than that, because we don't need more than about that number. On the application side, we'll be working with third-party developers, I would hope. And on the technology side, aside from two engineers in very specific areas, I think we're in pretty good shape. I could be wrong about that, but I think we are. Yes?
You didn't say much about Amiga desktops fitting into your business plan. And have you ever considered renaming KBOS to Amiga Inc.?
Those are two questions.
Yeah.
The first question is, I didn't say much about desktops. And the desktop, I mean, if the OS is done properly, you know, and it certainly has with OS 4, with Hyperion and the Friedman Brothers have been doing. But even if you look at the future of the OS, in my comments I was talking about the importance of an operating system to be able to migrate across devices, you know, transparently. One of those devices is obviously the desktop. And the desktops are important in two other respects. Developers don't develop on cell phones, you know, or PDAs or whatever you've got. I mean, they need a robust environment in which to develop, and that, by definition, is a desktop environment. The second is there's a traditional user base that can be grown, but let's be realistic. You can pick any number you want. Is the upper limit in the next 2 years for desktop 25,000 units? That would be pretty good, but not enough to sustain a business model. 100,000 units, that would be really good, and still not enough to sustain a business model. So the only way we can really sustain and help move forward anything that happens to be on the desktop is also to be successful in other markets. And that's the two. What was the second question again? Could we rename the company Amiga? I hadn't thought about that.
Don't do it.
I noticed as soon as you mentioned that, my computer automatically went off. Scared the living daylights out of the windows, people. In my view, products that are launched in the consumer side that are running an operating system that is based on Hyperion's work or any other version of Amiga should be and will be branded Amiga. So we would be extraordinarily hesitant to release stuff into the desktop, or, you know, what I'd really like to see is a laptop device that was branded Amiga. But we'd be very hesitant to go out and champion taking Hyperion's work on OS 4 and putting it into, you know, a Mac. Not that they'd want it, but, you know, or whatever. And so if it wasn't branded Amiga for the moment, I would be hard-pressed to be convinced that that's something that we should do. The wisdom of renaming the company Amiga Incorporated is something that would have to be really directed by the board. There are probably some very practical reasons right now that we will keep Camos as Camos Inc., with Amiga being a wholly owned subsidiary and Capacity being a wholly owned subsidiary. Obviously, the technical interests of Amiga and the technical interests of Capacity begin to merge for some markets. Is that responsive? Any other questions? Yeah, I guess you're saying no. So now that we bought the darn thing, what are we going to do about it? Well, I guess on the minor side of the answer to that question is that my understanding is the T-shirts went to be printed yesterday. And now, I realize that Brian has a background, you know, as a minister, so excuse me, but if I hear anything again about these damn T-shirts, and if I ever try to sell any of you a T-shirt, just hit me, you know. If I give you one for free, take it. If I try and sell you one, just hit me. On the coupons, that never should, in my view, that shouldn't have happened. It was not, I don't know what it was. I think that the consumer release of OS 4 will be then, by the end of the year, roughly, hopefully. By the time we get to the consumer release, we will have a resolution of that. I don't think anybody will lose any money, and we will resolve it satisfactorily. It's a drag, you know, but it needs to be done, and we plan to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah. The rollout of DE products, I know that Microsoft's had a significant difficulty in getting phone carriers to actually do business with them. In fact, they've been working on phone carriers for, I don't know, 5 years, you know, solid.
Right.
They're just now getting phones out. I mean, what market are you going to push for first? You know, the U.S.?
Well, our business plan, of course, revolves around really helping Microsoft develop their market. You know that.
First of all, repeat the question for the webcast.
The question was that currently DE is primarily enabled on Microsoft mobile devices, and this is not a market that's grown tremendously. As I said, that there will be technical and application extensions to DE that we will announce shortly that should address that very question. If you're going to do something that you say to the developers that what DE enables is the same application to play across devices without the necessity of reprogramming it, it's sort of a hollow promise if there's only one device. So the idea is to be able to take it across numerous devices. Obviously, that would include Java and things like that. So we're working on that. We have a better handle probably on what we're doing in the near term on DE than we do on some other things.
So I have a question.
Yes.
First question, how deep are your pockets? And the second question is, given some of the history we've heard about with the Intent company, the guys who made the core, Dow, who made the
intent engine for the core of DE. How do you plan to address that?
How deep are our pockets? You never have enough money, you know, and so, but we will, we have a relationship with an investment bank that all of you have heard of. I mean, if I said their name, you all would recognize their name. Their job's supposed to be able to raise money as we need it. In fact, I just talked to them yesterday and said, okay, banker guys, we need some. We've raised some money. We can raise some more. This is not the first company we've been involved with. The same people that are behind this have been behind several other companies, some of which have done quite well, one of which right now is starting to do extraordinarily well, and some of them haven't. But by and large, people realize that we take money from them, we try and use it as efficiently as we can toward pretty specific objectives. We won't be scatter shooting markets. We'll go after one market at a time with key large strategic partners. What was the second part of that, Bill? The second part of the question?
The Dow. Technology is dependent on the Dow Corporation or whatever for doing their work. How do you address that?
I just spent several days with Dow, and we have come to a technical agreement that's now in place. That needed to happen in terms of their new version called 1.5. And so we are actually joint venturing one piece of that development, and it's in progress as we speak. And soon everything that is known as DE, as well as some other stuff on top of that, will be enabled through Intent 1.5, including, of course, a version that is compatible with PowerPC devices. The reason that the relationship with Dow really didn't move forward as quickly as it might is because the two companies were sort of out of sync technically in terms of what they're trying to do. And so that Dow's moving to another version of Intent at the same time that Amiga is unable to move anything that they have to that version. And so there's this natural tension that starts to build up, because they're saying, hey, come on, guys. I mean, our timeline for 1.3, 1.5 is thus and so. And, of course, we all know that Amiga didn't really have the financial resources to address that in such a way that would make Dow happy. So we sat down with them. Quite aside from Amiga's relationship with Dow, one of my partners has been a friend and associate of Francis's for a long time. And so they know one another. They trust one another. We talk regularly. And I think it's the kind of relationship that will be smooth and very valuable to both parties. Great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I am delighted that I could spend some time with you this evening. And I was a little concerned because I've never been to an Amiga event before, but I noticed that we have not only a security officer at the door, but they don't even let you guys have any alcohol, so I figured I was probably fairly safe. And I just want to apologize to all of you that are disappointed that I was unable to bring any of my lawyers with me tonight. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for bringing us up to speed on what's happening. And I know it's probably as good a day as it can be for us to know that now KMOS owns Amiga Inc., and that's, I think, a very good sign for all of us. I just wanted to mention a few things about this show and next year's show. As all of you are aware, next year's show is the 20th anniversary of the introduction of the Amiga. And so we're going to be trying to do something hopefully a little more polished than this next year. So I wanted to encourage all of you who are curious about whether AMUS is, you know, everybody always asks, are you going to have a show next year? And we always say yes, and we always have. So we're going to say I think that we can safely commit to that at this point. And we're hoping, as we were sort of talking over dinner, maybe next year it'll be a little bigger. At least we hope so. So, but I wanted to say to each of you, thank you for being here and continuing to support not only the companies who are doing this, but each other.
because I know there's a great deal of networking that goes on here personally, and it's something that we look forward to every year, being able to see each of you and find out what you're doing individually. It's probably the most creative group of people I've ever been associated with. And, of course, that statement doesn't mean much to you because you don't know a whole lot about what I've, you know, what my life has been like. But I've spent a lot of it in the arts and music field as well, and a whole lot of creative people, some of whose names you would probably recognize. But this is at least as creative a group on the technology side of things, as well as for computer graphics and all the rest of the things that we know the Amiga does. And I'm really proud to be associated with a group like this, especially at this juncture. And so I wanted to thank each of you personally for being here and for continuing to support the AmiWest show. And hopefully we will all see you next year as well. Of course, there is tomorrow.
Yes.
So don't forget to come tomorrow. And we will be here for that. The raffles will continue. We'll have things for sale, and we'll have lots of good conversation as well. Thanks very much for coming, and we hope to see you all next year at the 20th anniversary, which will be AmiWest 8 for us. Thank you.